Good morning. Yay! All right. Good morning, good morning, good morning. The chair calls the third meeting of the ALA Council to order. Would all counselors please occupy the reserved seats at the front of the room? I realize some of you are still collecting documents. At this meeting, we will again follow the same rules that were approved during the ALA Council 1 meeting. Again, as a courtesy to others, please turn your cell phones off or to silent prompting. If you need to make or take a call, please leave the council area. Thank you so much. And also, please watch the overhead screen for the motion description to use on your voting card. You may only use that descriptor. Your voting record is at your place. You should have a blue card for this morning's meeting. If you must leave before adjournment, please take your card to Lois Ann Gregory Wood. A quorum for a council meeting is 75 councilors. We have well over 75 councilors present, and therefore we have a quorum. Written reports should be read and when should not be read. And when resolutions are presented, only the resolve clauses should be read. The chair would like to ask that persons submitting reports be as brief as possible, since today's agenda is very full. The agenda, Council Document Number 8.7, revised, 9 p.m., the time, and all other documents issued since the last council meeting are available at the pickup station in this room. Again, I would suggest that those of you who are on the agenda to report come up on the stage and sit beside Keith Michael Field shortly before your presentation. This will enable us to move through the agenda more effectively. Thank you. We have received the following resolutions to add under new business. Resolution on notifying conference and meeting attendees of hotels named on Do Not Patronize lists, ALA Council Document Number 32, revised. Resolution on the removal and censorship of art from the Smithsonian Institution's National Portrait Gallery, ALA CD Number 36, revised. Resolution on WikiLeaks and federal agencies, ALA CD Number 37, revised, dated January 10th, 2011. Resolution in support of WikiLeaks ALA Council Document Number 38, revised, dated January 10th, 2011, and resolution in support of requesting Congress to reintroduce and vote on the DREAM Act, ALA Council Document Number 39, revised, dated January 10th, 2011, at 5:45 p.m. Do you have any other new business to add at this time? Hearing no objections, the chair declares the agenda adopted. Council Policy 5.3.15 provides that memorials, tributes, and testimonials will be presented at the beginning of the last session of the ALA Council at the annual conference. I think we might want to say midwinter meeting here. Okay, at the midwinter meeting. I will now read the names of persons recognized by memorial resolutions. Let us stand as I read the names to remember those individuals. And they are George P. D'Elia, Locke Morrissey, Edward Hawley, Norman Horrocks, Carolyn Wicker Field. Thank you. Please be seated. We have received three tributes to announce today. 100th anniversary of the Arkansas Library Association. Yay! Retired Members Roundtable, where a number of us are going. Yay! John Eisen's retirement from Demco Incorporated. Yay, but we're going to miss him. He's really a fixture for our association. Copies of the memorials, tributes, and testimonials are available at the council pickup station in this room. I now call your attention to ALA Council Document 11.2 and ask M. Claire Knowles, Chair of the Tellers, to present the ALA Executive Board election results. We need the mic.
Good morning. The Tellers Committee met yesterday at 7:30 p.m. 128 ballots were requested. 128 ballots were returned. One ballot was voided. The following three candidates were elected to three-year terms on the ALA Executive Board: Dora T. Ho, Sylvia K. Norton, Michael Porter.
Will the newly elected Executive Board members please stand so that we can continue clapping for you? Come on, we want to give you recognition. Congratulations.
May I continue?
You can.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I got a script, you know. The three elected Executive Board member terms will begin at the close of 2011 ALA Annual in New Orleans, Louisiana, and extends to the end of 2014 Annual Conference in San Diego, California. Thank you.
Thank you, M. Claire. And congratulations again to the winning candidates. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 25 and call upon Tom Wilding, Chair of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, to report. Tom.
Good morning. We always like to get you started early in the morning with Constitution and Bylaws. I don't know why they do this to this committee, but I can't even be awake enough to read this document. Anyway, in case anybody wonders, because it has been an issue as to whether I wear hats out of a lack of respect or not, I wear hats because I live in Arizona and my head doesn't have a lot of hair on it, and so I have to use some other covering, and so that's where this started. But I'm really vying with Mary Geekes, who has a hat collection to be envious of. So I'm trying to build up to the point where people are envious of mine, too. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm working on it. Anyway, the Constitution and Bylaws Committee has several items for you to consider. The first one, as most of you probably know, constitutional amendments require passage at two successive meetings of council. So we approved a couple of amendments to the Constitution back in June in Washington, D.C., and they are coming here for a second approval, and you have them. I'm going to not go into the history of it, although I know that some people are new and weren't involved in the history of it. But I used the same paragraph to introduce this, so you can read the paragraph and maybe you'll understand why we're doing this. Action item number one, I will read. This is our first one. It's resolved that that ALA Constitution Article 9 be replaced in its entirety with the following. Article 9, Endowment Funds. 1. Receipts from life memberships and all gifts for endowment purposes shall, subject to conditions attached thereto, constitute endowment funds. Subject to conditions legally incident thereto, such funds shall be in the custody of no fewer than 3 nor more than 6 appointed trustees. One or more of these appointed trustees shall be appointed by the Executive Board annually to hold office for 3 years from the date of appointment or until a successor shall be appointed. 2. The trustees shall have authority to hold, invest, reinvest, disperse, and otherwise deal with endowment funds in accordance with such directions as may be given them by the ALA Executive Board. The principal of and income from endowment funds shall be expended under the directions of the Executive Board, but no such expenditures shall be made except in accordance with any conditions imposed by the donors of any such funds, nor any purposes which are not in consonance with the approved policies of the Association, nor shall principal be expended unless expressly permitted by the terms of the gift or any amendment or modification thereof. No action shall be taken with reference to investment, reinvestment, or other principal transaction with respect to securities held in the endowment fund, except upon a resolution adopted by or written order signed by a majority of the trustees. 3. The ALA treasurer shall serve as an ex officio voting trustee.
Is there any discussion on item number 1? Hearing no further discussion, we will move to a vote. All those in favor of item number 1 of CD number 25, please raise one hand. All those opposed, please raise one hand. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 25, item 1.
That was a long paragraph to read.
You did.
The second item has to do with the executive director. And in the summer, I asked if we could do these as one, and I believe you consented, so I will ask that again, if we can just treat action item 2A, 2B, and 2C as one item. Is that your pleasure? Okay. I will read then action item 2A, resolve that the ALA Constitution, Article 8, Section 1, be amended to include the parenthetical descriptor non-voting after the executive director in the second sentence, so that the sentence reads, the officers of the association shall be a president-elect who shall serve as vice president, an executive director non-voting, and a treasurer. Action item 2B, resolve that the ALA Constitution Article 3 be amended by inserting voting before the word members, so that the last sentence reads as follows. The executive board may suspend a member for cause after a hearing by a two-thirds vote of the voting members of the executive board, and may reinstate a member by a three-fourths vote of the voting members of the executive board. Action item 2C, resolve that the ALA Constitution, Article 7, Section 4, be amended by inserting the phrase of the voting members to read as follows. A majority of the voting members shall constitute a quorum of the executive board. And that next line just didn't get deleted, so just ignore that last line. It's not really there.
Is there any discussion on item number 2A, B, C? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with the vote. All those in favor of action item 2A, B, and C, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 25, item 2A, B, C.
Now we start getting to the more difficult part. That part was easy. As you know, Norman Horrocks chaired a task force last spring to sort of clean up the bylaws and constitution. And what we just did was the result, at least one of those, was the result of that. We left the bylaws issues to now, because they only need to pass once here before they go on the ballot. A lot of the stuff that came out of that task force were cosmetic things that we could just do. Put a comma here, take a comma out here, if it didn't change the sense of it. And, you know, fix some things that happened when it got transferred from a print mode to a web mode that sort of got some things out of whack. But we got all that straightened out. There were a couple things that were hangovers from that. Well, wrong word, probably. But There was an issue with Article 3, Section 4A, which describes the responsibilities of the Committee on Election, because it had been written a while ago. The charge had been changed, apparently, and expanded to include roundtables, which the bylaws don't state for the Committee on Election. So we're trying to fix that. But rather than tinker with one section of the bylaws, what we did was go back and review the entire Article 3 to see if there were other issues. And in the process of doing that, we found some. And it had to do with the election process for councilors. We thought that that wasn't clear, got a little confusing as to exactly how that was working. So we bring to you two items, Action Item 3 and Action Item 4. Action Item 4 is the one that actually goes with the original Norman Horrocks Task Force issue. And Action Item 3, because it comes first in the bylaws, we made Action Item 3. So let me explain the Action Item 3 a little bit. One of the problems with it is that remind myself. Article 3, Section 1, Subsection 9 now implies at least that there's a separate process for filling vacancies. That there's a ballot for electing councilors, and it implies by its placement that there is yet a separate ballot that only has candidates for filling vacancies. If you read it carefully, that's what it looks like. So we decided that that's not how it works. If we're electing 33 councilors and there's a vacancy, the 34th one becomes the vacancy. So we wanted to clarify that in the bylaws. And so Action Item 3 tries to do that. And what I'll read you what we resolve. The Constitution and Bylaws Committee resolves that the ALA bylaws, Article 3, Section 1B and Section 1D, be amended as follows. Section B, such committee shall nominate candidates from among the general membership for the position of president-elect annually, for the position of treasurer whenever that is required by Article 8, Section 1 of the Constitution. Members at large of council, as provided in Section C below, including any vacant member at large positions, period. That, I think, incorporates then the election of vacant council seats into the election of council members at large, which it is. And it also clarifies that we're talking about members at large here, not all council members.
I'd like to ask a question, Tom. The item you're asking us to vote on.
I forgot and stopped at the period. We are also suggesting that we eliminate. We're not suggesting. We're moving that we eliminate Section 1D, which formally did speak to the vacancy thing. I'm sorry. Yes.
And my question is that if we vote as a body on this action item, you're suggesting this does not need to appear on a ballot for membership voting? Am I correctly interpreting this?
Yes. We had some recommendation from the parliamentarian that, in fact, we weren't changing the substance of the bylaws in any way. We were just creating a clarification and trying to make it clearer than it currently is.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Microphone number two.
Joseph Egan, Executive Board. Tom, I wonder if you could explain to us more about times when this does not have to go to the membership. Is this because Ellie is telling us that we can do this? What if somebody challenges this? I don't think this is a problem, but I'm wondering for the future.
The Constitution, actually, in 1111, isn't it? Thank you. Ellie has nicely underlined this so that I read the right pieces, I think. Section 2 says Section 2 of Article 11 of the Constitution says, the Council, upon recommendation of the Constitution and Bylaws Committee or the Committee on Organization, may make such editorial changes in these bylaws as do not change their substance or meaning. Those changes shall take effect upon such action and shall be referenced in the next, well, the next ALA Handbook of Organization.
Which, probably immediately.
It's on the web. It's on the web.
Microphone number two.
Carol Hughes, Counselor at Large. Tom, I just want to make sure I understand about the vacancies. Is that 34th person with the 34th number of votes filling out a term or starting a new term? Because I think if they're filling out a term, then it's very important to make sure that that is clear.
That's in the next piece of this, is we clarify sort of terms and when they start, and that's addressed there. So can I think that'll be answered in a minute or half an hour or whatever.
Microphone number two.
Sue Camp, Counselor at Large. I think that we should inform Council, Tom, that the committee we're referring to is the Elections Committee.
Yes, this article is about the election, the election process and the election committee on election.
Hearing no further discussion, we will move forward with the vote. All those in favor of Council Document Number 25, Item 3, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD Number 25, Item 3.
Okay. I'm sorry, I just destroyed my order of notes here. Okay. The next item refers to Bylaws Article 3, Section 4. And we had some. Oh, yeah, right. This is the one where the charge of the Committee on Elections, on election singular, did not have roundtables as part of it. And what we're recommending is the addition of the roundtables into that section. And so resolve that the ALA bylaws, Article 3, Section 4A, be amended to read as follows. The Executive Board shall appoint a committee on election which shall have charge of the conduct of the regular elections of the association, the divisions, and the roundtables, and the counting and tabulation of all votes cast. This also was recommended as a cosmetic, sort of like a cosmetic change, not a substantive change.
Okay. Is there any discussion on item number 4? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with the vote. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 25, item 4.
We had also with the Norman Horrocks committee, a task force, had a question about Article 4, Section 3. Now I'm behind again. Which refers to a qualification process for elected counselors. And Norman asked, what does that mean? And then after Norman wasn't with us anymore, and he didn't send back the answer when he got there, we had to try to figure out what qualified means. And I think I put this on the council listserv, and I had a number of suggestions, all of which were different. And Joanne went back into the records and found that as early as 1940, this section was in there just as it is. And we figured that it must have meant something back there. But the only qualification process that we could come up with was when you go to nominate a counselor for election, there is a qualification process. You have to show that you were a personal member and good standing and all that sort of stuff. So we decided to do away with that, and in the process, tinkered with this a little bit. And that brings us to action item 5A. We also, when we were rewriting this, realized that we needed to be more specific about the elected counselors in this sentence, because chapter counselors are handled in another section. So we are moving that. The language of Article 4, Section 3 be amended to read as follows. All elected at-large divisional and roundtable counselors, except those elected to fill vacancies, shall serve terms of 3 years commencing at the adjournment of the final ALA council meeting of the annual conference following their election.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, we will move forward with a vote. All those in favor of item number 5A, council document number 25, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 25, item 5A.
I should add that the committee did not feel this was cosmetic because it is setting the terms and that isn't now in the bylaws, and it should go to membership. The final action item actually addresses Carol's question earlier about the terms of vacancies, of people filling vacancies. I believe the practice has been that the person filling the vacancy actually doesn't take office until after the annual conference, when terms start and their term is for 2 years or 1 year or whatever the remaining period of the vacancy is. And if it is other than that, it isn't specified in the bylaws clearly. So we've addressed that by a resolution to, or a move, we're moving to resolve that Article 4, Section 5 of the bylaws be amended to read as follows. A vacancy in the membership of council representing the association at large shall be filled at the following election to complete the unexpired term and take effect immediately after the election is certified. What that means is that the 34th councilor or 35th councilor, depending on which year you're in, who is elected and would fill a vacancy would be seated immediately after the election is certified and serve at annual conference.
Is there any discussion? Microphone number 6.
Barbara Miller, counselor at large. I just wanted to add information to this. Last election, I was the 34th voted in counselor, and I was already a counselor finishing my term last summer, and Lois Ann gave me information that I was to take place immediately, but she didn't let me vote twice last summer. So I just wanted to pass that on.
We should add another sentence in here that says, unless you are, you don't get to.
Microphone number 3.
Aaron Dobbs, counselor at large. I started my first term, and how Tom described it is exactly the practice that was used for me. So thank you for updating to accurately reflect current practice.
Hearing no further discussion, we will move forward with the vote. CD number 25, item 5B. All those in favor of item 5B, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 25, item 5B.
The committee does not feel that that is a cosmetic one either, and we feel it should go to the ballot. There is one remaining item in the bylaws that hasn't been dealt with. We just weren't prepared to do it here. We couldn't seem to come to consensus on what to do with it. So we will probably bring that to you at annual conference. And I just want to say it's sort of daunting to take Norman Horrock's place. So I hope he approved of what I just did. And if he doesn't, I'm sure I'll hear about it.
We thank you, Tom, and we thank the Constitution and Bylaws Committee. Okay, here we go. I'm going to read a statement here. In accordance with Policy 4.8, amendments to Constitution and or bylaws when placed on the ballot will be accompanied by pro and con statements. As ballot language must be finalized by February 2nd, if you would be willing to prepare either a pro statement or a con statement, depending on how you voted for a particular item, please see Joanne Kemp at the dais at the conclusion of this meeting. Looks like we may have a lot of pros, but a dearth of cons. Okay, but you have that information. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document 19 through 19.1 and call upon Julius Jefferson, Chair of the Intellectual Freedom Committee, to report. Julius.
Good morning. First, I would like to just give you a little disclosure, disclaimer. What I will report to you today are my views and only my views and do not reflect the views of the Library of Congress. So I always have to say that if I want to stay employed. Thank you. The IFC is really pleased to update you and report the great projects from the Office of Intellectual Freedom. I will highlight what was written in the written report. First, a newsletter. The Office for Intellectual Freedom publishes a print bi-monthly publication titled The Newsletter for Intellectual Freedom. In light of budgetary restraints and costs to print this publication, the committee has discussed and examined the possibility of moving to an online model and has surveyed subscribers for their opinions for such a change. At the IFC's discussions during the conference, it was determined that moving to an online format with a print option will be the best alternative to keep the newsletter financially viable. OIF staff will explore the option further and bring a report back to IFC at annual conference. I'm also proud to report that the OIF, in collaboration with ALA TechSource, and a new effort this year that resulted in the publication of a special November-December issue of Library Technology Report, Privacy and Freedom of Information in the 21st Century Libraries. OIF staff conceived and coordinated the contents of this issue, calling on some great writers that contributed really interesting articles on topics such as social networking and filtering relating to IF issues in libraries today. You can also, I think in the report, there is a link, and you can actually check out that publication. Projects. Choose Privacy Week, and this is a really great one. I'm pleased to report to you that OIF has been awarded a two-year grant in the amount of $105,650 from the Open Society Institute for Privacy Programming. Previously, OIF had received a $350,000 grant from OSI that enabled the development of the first ever Choose Privacy Week. The focus of the new grant will deal with privacy and young people and privacy in the cultural context of immigrant and refugee communities' use of libraries. OIF believes that this grant will help Choose Privacy Week develop into an institution similar to Banned Books Week. So for more information, there's also a link. You can go to www.privacyrevolution.org, and we encourage you to do that. Banned Books Week, another really outstanding event from the OIF. 2010 Banned Books Week was held September 25th through October 2nd and marked the 29th year. The readout kicked off Banned Books Week in the historic Buckhouse Square in Chicago, Illinois, that was sponsored by OIF, the McCormick Civics Program, and Newberry Library. This fantastic event was very well attended and was hosted by critically acclaimed and censored young adult author Chris Crutcher. Also, Lauren Miracle, author of the book series Most Frequently Challenged in 2009, TTYL, TTFN, and later Gator. Those are the little text acronyms. Shared her experience as a target of censors. Some of the other very distinguished speakers were the ALA president, Roberta Stevens, Freedom to Read Foundation president, Ken Oliver, ALA executive director, Keith Michael Fields, and other very notable local Chicago celebrities. In addition to the readout, there was also, Fan Books Week also had a Second Life event on ALA Island, and that was extremely, extremely successful. And Banned Books 2011 will begin September 27th and continue through October 4th. And in the report, there's also a link where you can get other merchandise, including posters, bookmarks, T-shirts. And finally, the action item before council today involves WikiLinks. We bring this one action item today in response to the concerns about complex and controversial issues regarding the government response to WikiLeaks and the First Amendment implications for whistleblowers. The OIF and OGR jointly developed a website to inform members about the complex issues raised through the conversation taking place among ALA members. In addition, OIF and OGR jointly sponsored a midwinter program on issues raised by the WikiLeaks disclosures, which took place Saturday, January 8th. And this discussion was led by Patrice McDermott, director of opengovernment.org, and former deputy director of the Office of Government Relations at ALA. Finally, the IFC and COL joined together to review the issues associated with WikiLeaks disclosure. And because of the sensitive nature of this matter and the discussion, I, as employee of the federal government and the Library of Congress, recused myself from all of discussions involving WikiLeaks. And I asked the past immediate chair, Martin Garner, to lead all discussions for the Intellectual Freedom Committee regarding WikiLeaks. So jointly, IFC, along with the COL, and with the chair of COL, Charles Kratz, and in the spirit of collaboration, worked on a joint resolution. And with permission of the chair, I would like to bring up COL Chair Charles Kratz.
Please do. And also, although I am on leave without pay for 11 months from the Library of Congress to serve as president, I am still an employee of the federal government, and I am recusing myself from this portion of the meeting, and Molly Raphael will take over the podium as chair.
If there should be any questions regarding what the IFC committee and the IFC committee discussion, and I'm looking in the audience for Carrie Gardner, if she is available. Carrie, raise your hand. You can also direct any questions to Carrie Gardner. Other than that, I think Charles is very capable of informing you of the joint discussion and resolution.
Charles? Good morning, everyone. So I want to call your attention to Council Document 19.1, which is the resolution on access to and classification of government information. And as Julius has said, this is a joint resolution that IFC and COL worked on together, and that we followed a due diligence process through the entire conference with the forums and discussions throughout the Congress and vetting this resolution at council forum. So I'm prepared to read the resolve.
Please do.
The resolve that the American Library Association commends President Barack Obama for establishing the National Declassification Agency and issuing Executive Order 13526 on classified national security information, and supports and encourages expanded initiatives to reform the U.S. classification system. Two, urges Congress to pass legislation that expands protections for whistleblowers in the federal government, such as the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act of 2010. Three, urges the U.S. President, Congress,
the federal courts, and the executive and legislative assemblies to defend the inalienable right of the press and citizens to disseminate information to the public about national security issues and to refrain from initiatives that impair these rights. And four, affirms the principles that government information made public within the boundaries of U.S. law should be made available through libraries and the press without restriction. This resolution is endorsed in principle by Godort. And I'm happy to answer questions.
Is there any discussion? Microphone six.
Tiffany Connor, CERT counselor. I just want to mention that CERT endorses this in principle as well.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing no one coming to the mic, we will proceed to the vote. Will all those in favor please raise one of your hands? Thank you. All those opposed? The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 19.1.
Thank you.
And I will turn the podium back over to President Stevens.
Thank you, Julius. Thank you, Charles. I now refer you to ALA Council Document number 20 through CD 20.4 and call upon Charles E. Kratz, Jr., Chair of the Committee on Legislation, to present his report. Charles.
Good morning. That was a pretty smooth transition there, so. The ALA Committee on Legislation brings you this report to Council with four action items for your consideration. This report also includes several important information items. We refer you to the ALA Washington Office six-month report emailed to you in December by Emily Shafikov, where you will find additional information about recent legislative activities of the Committee on Legislation and the Office of Government Relations. Last year, as you know, Library Advocacy Day was a big success, and now we resume the tradition of our national legislative days. As leaders in our communities, you know how incredibly important vital advocacy is for libraries, particularly in these tough economic times and uncertain political times. The event this year will be held on May 9th and 10th, 2011, at the Liaison Hotel on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., and we hope to see as many of you there as possible. One of the most important pieces of information to report to you is a very exciting passage of the Library Services and Technology Act that we know as LSTA, as part of the Museum and Library Services Act. On December 22nd, President Obama signed the act in law following its passage the week before. The passage of LSTA during the 111th Congress just ended, the fact that it was passed, is an incredible feat. It's a credit to the consistent, outstanding grassroots efforts of the association and the very hard work of the Washington office. And this was truly a great victory for us. The first of the four resolutions is a resolution that about the Library Services and Technology Act, and it's Council Document 20.1. The title is Resolution Commending the U.S. Congress and the President on the Reauthorization of the Museum and Library Services Act. And I'll read the resolve. Resolve, the American Library Association commends the leadership of Senator Jack Reed, co-sponsors Senators Thad Cochran, Richard Burr, Tom Harkin, Susan Collins, Michael Enzi, and John Tester, and the members of the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives and President Barack Obama for their efforts to sustain the federal role supporting library services as the cornerstone of our nation's information infrastructure.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of Resolution 20.1 commending the U.S. Congress and the President on the reauthorization of the Museum and Library Services Act, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion passes. Mark your ballot, CD number 20.1.
Our second item is Council Document 20.2, entitled Resolution Commending President Obama and the U.S. Senate in Nominating and Confirming Susan Hildreth to IMLS Director. I'll read the resolve. Resolve that the American Library Association commends President Obama for nominating Ms. Hildreth to serve as the Director of IMLS and the U.S. Senate for confirming her. And this is endorsed by the Government Documents Roundtable. In principle, by the Government Documents Roundtable.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of Resolution 20.2, commending President Obama and the U.S. Senate in nominating and confirming Susan Hildreth to be IMLS Director, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot 20.2.
And I will say that I want to add that resolution was endorsed by the Public Library Association. It was actually a joint resolution, if I can add that. Our third document is 20.3, resolution thanking Bob Tupelo for his service as the 25th Public Printer of the United States. Resolve that the American Library Association express gratitude to Mr. Tupelo for his service as the nation's 25th public printer. And this is endorsed by the Government Documents Roundtable.
Microphone number 3.
Aaron Dobbs, Counselor at Large, channeling Janet Swanhill. Do we mean express gratitude or expresses gratitude? Is the resolution here going to be sent to her, or are we going to write something else? Because express implies that we're going to go write something expressing our appreciation.
I think our intent is to write something to express our gratitude.
Okay, thanks.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, we will proceed with the vote. All of those in favor of Resolution 20.3, thanking Bob Tupelo for his service as the 25th Public Printer of the United States, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot 20, CD number 20.3.
Okay, and our fourth action item is Council Document 20.4, resolution to commend Senator Jack Reed for his efforts to recognize libraries as essential community organizations during disasters. Resolve that the American Library Association commends Senator Jack Reed for his tireless efforts working to convince the Federal Emergency Management Agency, known as FEMA, to amend its policies to recognize libraries as essential community organizations, thus entitled to reimbursement for temporary relocation facilities.
Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, we will proceed with the vote. All of those in favor of Resolution 20.4 to commend Senator Jack Reed for his efforts to recognize libraries as essential community organizations during disasters, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 20.4.
Okay, so in closing, I'd just like to take a moment to thank the members of the Committee on Legislation and our outstanding ALA Washington office staff for all their contributions during this conference. Additionally, I want to reach out and thank the members of the Intellectual Freedom Committee and the staff of the Office of Intellectual Freedom for their outstanding collaborative efforts with our joint resolution that you heard about a little bit earlier. And finally, I want to thank the chair for the opportunity to serve as chair.
Thank you very much, Charles, and thanks to everyone on the teams. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 18 through Number 18.1 and call upon Shali Zhang, Chair of the International Relations Committee, to present the report. Shali.
Good morning. I would like to take this opportunity to share only a few highlights of the Association's international community, from the Association's international community. Seventy-five international librarians from 18 countries participated in this midwinter meeting. the International Relations Roundtable hosted a small-scale cocktail reception to welcome our international guests. Tomorrow, January 12th, is 1 year anniversary of the earthquakes happened in Haiti, which damaged many libraries' archives. The AOL relief efforts to date have raised and distributed more than $25,000 for three libraries affected by earthquakes. Much more is needed. Therefore, International Relations Committee encourages all AOL members to continue to contribute to this effort. The committee passed a motion last Friday to express our gratitude to Maggie Farrell, a committee member, and Vivian Pisano from the OITP Advisory Committee for their serving as co-chairs of the Traditional Cultural Expressions Task Force and its members for their effort in their tasks in such a short period of time. Mr. Ingrid Parent, incoming IFLA president, attended this midwinter meeting. U.S. librarians consist of 19% of the IFLA members. Mr. Parent commended the contributions from U.S. librarians to help shape the policy development and programs at IFLA. The 2011 IFLA conference will be held in August this year in San Juan, Puerto Rico. As reported previously, in May 2010, ALA was again invited by U.S. State Department to be a member of U.S. National Commission of UNESCO. The International Relations Committee developed the criteria and issued an open call in selecting ALA representative to the U.S. Commission. The committee received a strong pool of nominations. Yesterday, the committee reviewed nominations according to the criteria. The recommendations will be sent to the executive board for approval. This year of 2011 is the IFLA selection cycle for its standing committees. The recruitment calls for nominations were sent out to their memberships by all LA units last spring. The committee reviewed the nominations from this unit and presented the recommended list to the executive board for approval. This year, 30 AOA members were recommended to serve on IFLA standing committees. The International Relations Committee, we would like to thank all AOA units in their efforts in selecting highly qualified candidates to represent AOA to IFLA. You can find a list of the AOA representative at the end of the committee's report. 115 AOA members attended the Guadalajara Book Fair at the end of last November. President Roberta Stevens presented at the annual colloquium coordinated by the University of Guadalajara with a presentation on protections of cultural works. The session attracted a packed audience of 200. The committee is pleased to report that Barbados and Taiwan joined the campaign for the World Libraries in fall 2010. As the chair of this committee, I was invited to the AOA Advocacy Coordinating Group to help connect the domestic and international advocacy efforts of the association. The group is also interested in working with the committee and IRT for an international snapshot day in April next year. Last September, I participated in a China-North American Library Conference held in Beijing. The conference was organized by the Library Congress, National Library of China, and the Library Society of China, with the theme of sharing digital resources. A U.S. delegation of more than 50 librarians and information professionals participated in the conference. The International Relations Committee, IRT, and other AOA units have begun to develop the new 2015 International Strategic Plan, which will guide the international initiatives, programs, and priorities of the association. The ALA's international community shared sadness with the council of the passing of Mr. Norman Horrocks, an international advocate and a notable RRT member. Very recently, we lost another advocate, Mr. Edward Swanson, whose passing also saddened the IFLA community. Finally, I want to take this opportunity to express our gratitude to Michael Dowling, the International Relations Office Director, and to his staff for the excellent assistance to the programs, initiatives, and events of IRC and IRT. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions for Shali? Hearing no questions, we thank you very greatly, Shali. What I would like to do now, with your indulgence, is before we begin the new business, is to take a break for 15 minutes and return at 9:15. We also have an individual who has a special request who approached me before the council session started. This is weather-related. Microphone number 6.
Hi, Barbara Miller, Councillor at Large. I had a colleague whose plane has already been delayed till tomorrow and is looking for a roommate. I've since found a roommate for that colleague, but I urge all of you who have flights east that there have been significant delays, and perhaps... I'm willing to act as a go-between, but anybody who knows that they need another roommate to share a room to save a little money for tonight or the next night to, try to rendezvous so we don't have to pay so much. And I'm willing to put that together over here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's begin our break and be back in our seats at 9:15. Good, good. I see action. All right. It appears we have a goodly number of individuals who have returned to their seats, and we will continue. We will now take up new business, and these items will be discussed in the order in which they were submitted. We will continue our discussion of ALA Council Document Number 32, Revised Resolution on Notifying Conference and Meeting Attendees of Hotels Named on the Do Not Patronize List. When the meeting was adjourned, an amendment to the main motion was pending, and it was postponed. That amendment has since been revised. If there is no objection, the new amendment will replace the old amendment. I invite Tom Wilding to the microphone to read the revised amendment. That would be helpful if Tom were here. He's here. Where are you, Tom? Microphone 3. You got to excuse these cataracts. Okay. Microphone number 3.
We're going to do a duet. Okay. I move that the resolve clause be deleted and the following be added, that the American Library Association Executive Director will provide registrants with information on how to determine whether there are labor disputes at hotels with contracted housing blocks so that registrants can decide whether to utilize the information when making hotel choices. Also that the resolution title be deleted and the following be added: resolution on labor disputes. And
Carrie Gardner, now I can, you know, I would like to have you speak to the revised amendment.
Can I speak with a woman's voice?
Yes, you can.
Speaking in Carrie Gardner at Large's voice, may I add that the phrase "the executive director will," the phrase "the executive director" should be added after the word "add." Yesterday after Council 2, myself and a number of members met with Paula, and she agreed that this language would keep us at least 3 feet from any legal trouble, and I know that she was here. She's here if Council would like to hear from her. A number of us worked together to draft this language. It was presented at Council Forum, and there are many of us here willing to answer questions about it.
Okay, do we have that change in the amended version? I believe we do. Do we?
Yes.
I have some vision issues.
The screen
here.
Is correct now.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much. We have a discussion at this point, so we go forward with that. Microphone number 6.
Aaron Dobbs, Councillor at Large, as the original mover of the amendment, I'm speaking in favor of the replacement that we're doing today. Thank you very much. It sounds much better than what I said.
Microphone number 2. Microphone, we have a microphone number. Okay, she was, okay. Microphone number 6.
Tiffany Connor, CERT Counselor. I rise in support of the amended resolution on the behalf of CERT.
Microphone number 2.
Marilyn Henshaw, Counselor at Large. Do I read this as a resolution on labor disputes? Should that not be more specific and talk about conference hotel labor disputes? It's a question to the authors.
It's microphone number 3.
Here, Carrie Gardner at Large. I don't think that it is as narrow as what Marilyn mentioned. For example, one of the hotels in a contentious debate at this conference is in debate because the owners funded Prop 8 to the tune of around $100,000. If you've had a chance to look at some of the Do Not Patronize lists, I think you'll find that the amount of information provided is fairly extensive. So that someone can go there and see the reason why a hotel is placed on such a list and then decide if that's an issue they care about.
Microphone number 2.
Still, I wonder if this puts us in the position as ALA of trying to do information on all sorts of labor disputes. I mean, not even our organization. Those not related to our organization is what I'm speaking about.
Thank you, Marilyn. Microphone number 3.
Aaron Dobbs, Councillor at Large, was just talking to Carrie, and both of us agree that adding hotel in there, you know, narrows it down a little bit, and that would be fine by us.
Microphone number 2.
Joseph Egan, member of the executive board. I wonder at times if we're not really micromanaging the association. And things like this, you know, bother me because we've spent a great deal of time on this. It's ironic that the American Library Association itself is not unionized. Now, we're having a huge amount of issue with, you know, the unionization issue at hotels. We don't own these hotels. We really don't have much to do with these hotels. We have an awful lot to do with our own staff. Why are we not talking about unionizing the ALA staff rather than the, you know, issues with hotels? Now, I work for a county where there's a union. I'm not a member of the union, but I'm just, you know, perplexed by why we're spending a huge amount of time to direct the executive director to do a fairly minor thing, to give some information to people. And I don't have a huge issue with, you know, hotels being unionized, or if the employees choose not to be unionized. But I'm wondering why we're spending this amount of time on what I would consider a very, very, very small matter. In addition, I am concerned about the legal problem. I went to the web page and I checked out the information, and I don't know, do we ever buy anything from Walmart or Kmart? They're also on the list. There's a restaurant on the list too. The other problem is, well in advance of this entire process, we go ahead and we make contractual relations with hotels. We do that years in advance. We don't know whether the owner of that hotel is homophobic, whether they have labor disputes there. Maybe we need to look into that too. Maybe we need to investigate every vendor that we deal with. Do they conform to our values? Do we do that? Do we want to do that? So we're losing money, money that goes to promote our programs, because of the situation at a hotel here in San Diego. We're losing money on that. We didn't even inform our members about that. So what would be the situation if we started to inform our members? How much money would we lose then? And where is that money going to come?
We have run out of time.
Thank you.
Microphone number two.
Carol Hughes, member at large. I also would add that it seems ironic that the executive director of ALA needs to tell a group of information professionals how to find information of interest to them.
Hearing no further discussion, we will move forward with a vote on the microphone number three.
Carrie Gardner at large. This association has a distinguished history of supporting the rights of people in a minority group. For decades, we have policies that have supported the rights of racial and ethnic minorities. Most recently, we have worked to support the rights of the GLBTQ community. And this resolution will allow members to have access to information that allows them to make choices. Of course, the executive director himself does not have to do this. He certainly may delegate this to the appropriate member of his staff.
Microphone number six.
Mary Mallory, counselor at large. I think we're really getting away from the issue and related to the hotels and employees who are trying to unionize. And I really appreciate the eloquence of many of the people who have spoken up, presumably against the resolution, but I would like to ask us to direct our attention to the point of the resolution. And I hope that the reason that ALA staff is not union organizing or pursuing union status, and that council is not pursuing that for them, is because they are reasonably well paid. And third, I did have one other point, but I'm not sure I can remember it.
Excuse me, we have to speak to the amendment, so that's what we're discussing right now. So I just want to give that out as a reminder to those at the microphone. We're not talking about the resolution at this point. We're talking about the amendment.
I thought it was speaking to that. Thank you.
Okay. Microphone number two.
Pat Weaver Myers, Oklahoma chapter counselor. I'm not sure this is directly to the amendment, but I'll couch it in those terms.
If it's not directed to the amendment, we'll move on to the next microphone.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, because we'll go back to the motion as amended. Microphone number three.
Yes, Jackie Rafferty, Massachusetts chapter counselor. I was invited to second this resolution due to the MLA having canceled our contract with Hyatt Cambridge. And many of you are aware of that situation. I spoke to the chapter counselors. You received facts giving all the information, the details of that situation. And I hope you read
Jackie, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Are you speaking to the amendment?
Well, I was giving a little background. I think a lot of people have addressed the philosophy. The Massachusetts Executive Board of the Libraries, Massachusetts Library Association Executive Board, voted unanimously for me to try to get out of the contract I had signed with the Hyatt in Cambridge due to the egregious firing of the Hyatt 100. And it really was a learning experience for us in that we realized that this is a complex issue, that you need contract language in your contracts that will give you a way out in the future in order to break this contract. We found the actions of the Hyatt unconscionable, and we were very glad that we could break that contract. And our rationale is that these social justice issues are very important. They're inherent in many library policies, and that if you really want to walk the talk of your policies, it is important to take action. Even if the issue is not very simple, there's many nuances and complexities that you need to take a stand in order to be able to walk that talk. And that is what we did. I realize that not all situations are created equal. We've heard many examples of how complex these negotiations and these contracts and these strike situations are. However, I just wanted to express to all of you how good MLA felt that we could take a stand against this unfair labor practice.
Microphone number two. We're speaking to the amendment.
I think it's already happened. I was going to call the question.
Okay. No one is at the mic anyway, so I think we can go ahead and proceed to a vote on the amendment. All those in favor of CD number 32 revised as it appears on the screen,
revised.
I'm going to read this. Resolved that the American Library Association direct the executive director. Resolve that the American Library Association executive director will provide registrants with information on how to determine whether there are labor disputes at hotels with contracted housing blocks so that registrants can decide whether to utilize the information when making hotel choices. That is what we are voting on. All those in favor, please raise one of your hands. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. Okay. The motion is defeated. We will now return to the original.
Point of order. I'm not
Mark
sure.
Mark your ballot. Number
point
30.
Point of order.
Yes.
I'm not sure people realized really what the vote was. I think it was...
Yeah, it was very clear from up here.
No, I mean what they were voting for.
We were voting on the amendment to the resolution that appeared on the screen. We were deleting text, and I read the new text. I will ask you, was that clear?
Yes.
And now we are voting on CD number 32, mark your ballot, CD number 32, revision amendment, because we were voting on the amendment, so mark your ballot. We are going to return to the original resolution. Microphone number two.
Sue Kam, Counselor at Large.
Okay. Activate microphone number two.
Hello? Okay. Sue Kam, Counselor at Large. I rise in opposition to this resolution for many of the reasons that other speakers have given, but particularly because there is absolutely no way those people for whom this is a concern cannot find the information without having the ALA directing them to do so.
Microphone number 5.
Pam Klipsch, Missouri Chapter Counselor. Unfortunately, I will now have to vote against this amendment because by what we did in defeating the amendment to the resolution was we rejected the advice of our lawyer as to how we could best protect ourselves. So now we're back in the situation where we may at some future time be at risk if people use ALA lists to discuss this issue. If that's your choice, that's your choice. But I think it was an unfortunate one.
Microphone number 3.
Doc Roth, Counselor at Large. The previous speaker really said what I was about to say. Now I don't have to make the difficult decision of whether to vote in favor or against the resolution itself, because without that amendment, the resolution is far more egregious in terms of its impact on ALA. It's against the advice of our council, and on those reasons, I don't even get to the merits of the resolution, because on those grounds, I have to vote against it.
Microphone number 2.
Pat Weaver-Myers, Oklahoma Chapter Counselor. There's one ethical issue that we haven't discussed, and that is a business ethics issue. We have an obligation as an honorable association to oblige by our contracts that we entered into. We may have entered into them with people who are not as sympathetic as a downtrodden workforce, but we did it. We signed the contract, and we have that obligation as well, and it's a matter of honor. We can register concerns. We can other kinds of provide financial personal support by opening our own wallets and donating it to people who are involved in those concerns and to help their cause. And we can join unions and do that kind of thing. But we also have a contractual obligation to the hotels, who also employ people who might be in favor of what the hotel is doing. Now, very egregious examples have been cited, but we're talking about all kinds of things that might place a hotel on the list. And I think we need to be cognizant of that business obligation that we entered into. Thank you.
Microphone number 6.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. I believe that I read a message from the executive director that said that, in fact, we can legally get out of these contracts. So I think people can vote one way or another, but I don't think it has anything to do with business ethics.
Microphone number 3.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. I think there's, or at least there's a lack of clarity in this that I guess I would like the mover to speak to. What it says is to the extent known at the initial announcement of conference registration and prior to the conference taking place. Does that mean at the time the initial announcement of conference registration takes place, which is months and months and months before, for annual, it's already started. And prior to the conference taking place, then all of a sudden, what do you do with that piece then of the prayer? Are you supposed to then continually update that information as registration goes forward to the beginning of the conference? I'm not sure what the sense of that prior to the conference taking place is in the context of the rest of the sentence. And if Janet Swan Hill were here, she would probably clarify that for me grammatically. But I'm just having real trouble understanding what the intent is.
Microphone number 6.
Stephanie Bronstein, Louisiana Chapter Counselor. I just want to go back and make a comment addressing the issue of being responsible party to a contract. A contract of this type is not a unilateral contract, and the contract has provisions built into it, as we've all been discussing, that cover the possibility of one of the partners having to back out, and that's where that monetary penalty comes in.
Hearing no further discussion, we will move forward with a vote on the resolve clause that appears on the screen. And I'm going to read it. Resolved that the American Library Association directs the executive director, to the extent known at the initial announcement of conference registration and prior to the conference taking place, will inform attendees of conferences and exhibitions if a hotel is on the do not patronize list of the local labor body sharing an ALA event or is the object of a boycott because of the unfair labor practices of the hotel. All those in favor of CD number 32 revised, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion does not carry. Mark your ballot, CD number 32 revised. Would ALA Councillor Loida Garcia-Febo please go to the microphone and read only the resolve clause of ALA Council Document Number 39, revised January 10, 2011, 5:54 p.m. The resolution in support of requesting Congress to reintroduce and vote on the DREAM Act.
Loida. Yes?
You have to excuse me, folks. I have very bad vision at this point. Microphone number four.
Loida Garcia, Fibon Councillor at Large. And resolved that the American Library Association urges members of the Congress of the United States to reintroduce and vote for the DREAM Act. Urges members of the Congress to include community service and vocational education in addition to attending college and joining the military as a pathway to citizenship. Asserts that having higher education, military service, or community service will provide these immigrant children greater success in life through higher lifetime earnings, higher income tax contributions, greater contributions to the economy, and less reliance on government assistance.
Loida, would you like to speak to the resolution?
Yes. This resolution is about our country of immigrants, and the historical path to citizenship provided to immigrants. It speaks to the importance of the immigrant community, and it also speaks to our country, to ALA broad acceptance of everyone in our community, and also speaks to the connection to libraries. Bringing these students to librarianship, we will be increasing diversity. The resolution has to do with libraries because it has to do with our communities, and we serve our communities. It was endorsed in principle by Reforma, COL, GLBTRT, YALSA, the ALA Diversity Council, the Intellectual Freedom Roundtable, and ALSC.
Is there any discussion? Microphone number two.
Joseph Egan, member of the Executive Board. On item number three, I'm wondering why it refers to immigrant children. Are other immigrants not going to be eligible for this? Is it only going to be for people under the age of 18? Or okay, good. Thank you.
Microphone number six.
Tiffany Connor, CERT counselor. I had spoken with the movers about this, and the last whereas clause CERT feels is sort of antithetical because some of the immigrants may have to resort to petty theft, you know, just to survive while they're here, which This would be antithetical to them becoming citizens. Additionally, we had requested that the word funding be added. I noticed the resolve clauses have changed a bit, but have federal funding or some kind of government funding to help these people get to the higher education or the community service. Otherwise, it just becomes a de facto military service because they don't have the money to afford higher education.
Microphone number 5.
Gladys Smiley Bell, Counselor at Large. For the record, I'd like to say that Black Caucus also voted to endorse this resolution in principle.
Hearing no further discussion, we will proceed to the vote on resolution in support of requesting Congress to reintroduce and vote on the DREAM Act. It's your council document number 39 revised. All those in favor of the motion, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot, council document number 39 revised. 1/10/11:54 p.m. Okay. Would ALA Counselor Peter Hepburn please go to the microphone and read only the resolve clause of ALA Council Document Number 36 Revised, Resolution on the Removal and Censorship of Artwork from the Smithsonian Institution's National Portrait Gallery. Microphone number 2.
Let me draw your attention that it is ALA...
Identify yourself.
Oh, Peter Hepburn, GLBTRT counselor, sorry. We're actually referring to ALA Council Document 36, a blue sheet that Larry Romans, chair of the Resolutions Committee, and I distributed this morning. Lois Ann does have a copy of that as well. Resolved that the American Library Association, ALA, commends the National Portrait Gallery for its inclusion of materials that reflect the diversity of our society, including those related to religious viewpoint, specifically as presented in the Hyde Seek exhibition. 2. Commends the National Portrait Gallery for its inclusion of materials that reflect the diversity of our society, including those that relate to sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation, specifically as presented in the Hyde Seek exhibition. ALA resolution on threats to library materials related to sex, gender identity, or sexual orientation. 3. Condemns the censorship of the Hyde Seek exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery. 4. Urges the National Portrait Gallery to immediately reinstate the video artwork by David, Wojnarowicz to the Hyde Seek exhibition at the National Portrait Gallery. 5. Urges the National Portrait Gallery to refuse to censor by removal or alteration other works of art from any exhibition or collection. And 6. Urges the Smithsonian Institution to fight censorship of works of art or collections dealing with any subject matter, including sex, gender identity, sexual orientation, or religious viewpoint in its national galleries, museums, archives, and libraries.
Peter, would you like to speak to the resolution?
Thank you, yes. This resolution arose from within the roundtable among the members. There was great outrage among the members when this happened, this example of censorship, and it came from them to the steering committee, this resolution. We feel as a roundtable it is crucial that an institution of such national and cultural importance not engage in censorship. This time around it is targeted GLBT material, and we wonder what it might be next time if it's allowed to do so. We have brought this resolution to the Intellectual Freedom Committee, and it was endorsed in principle there.
Is there any discussion? Microphone number 2.
John Moorman, Intellectual Freedom Roundtable Counselor. The Intellectual Freedom Roundtable also endorses this in principle.
Hearing no further discussion, we will proceed to the vote. On Council Document number 36 revised, the resolution on the removal and censorship of artwork from the Smithsonian Institution's National Portrait Gallery. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise one of your hands. All of those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. Mark your ballot. CD number 36, revised on blue. Okay, we are moving forward. Would ALA Councillor Tiffany Connor please go to the microphone and read only the resolve clause of ALA Council Document Number 37, revised January 10th, 2011, resolution on WikiLeaks and the federal agencies. I will be recusing myself from chairing this portion of the meeting as an employee on leave from the Library of Congress, a federal agency.
Microphone six.
Tiffany Connor, CERT Counselor. Resolve that the American Library Association calls for the amendment of Executive Order 13526, Classified National Security Information, dated December 29, 2009, to exclude publicly available information. Calls for the amendment of any other executive orders, public laws, or federal regulations that forbid access to publicly available information. And calls for all U.S. government agencies to follow the example of the Library of Congress in unblocking and providing access to documents available on WikiLeaks.
Would the mover like to speak to the motion?
I would, please. This resolution is addressing issues of freedom of speech, government transparency, and one of the basic tenets of librarianship, freedom of information. CERT feels that this resolution supports our first principles of access to information and active engagement in the democratic process. And this resolution specifically calls for action to update current laws to the realities of living in an electronically linked world. The resolution is not a value judgment, but rather an acknowledgement that information is available and libraries are in the business of providing access to publicly available information without restriction. And I want to leave you with a question. If WikiLeaks was a book, would you buy it for your collection?
Thank you. Microphone six.
Larry Romans, Counselor at Large. Because we've already dealt in a more general way with this this topic through the resolution that we passed presented by COL, I would like to postpone consideration of this resolution indefinitely.
Indefinitely. Then you need to move to table the motion. And tabling will need a two-thirds vote, and it's not debatable.
I thought we didn't use the word table anymore.
Sturgis does, I'm told.
Okay. Then I move to table this.
And do you have a second?
Do I have a second?
Multiply second. Is that good enough,
yes,
or should I get a name here?
Kevin Reynolds.
Okay. Now, there is no discussion on this motion. So the motion is to table this resolution, and if I might just explain, that means that it will not come back to council. We'll take a two-thirds vote to table. If it does not get a two-thirds vote, we will go back to discussion. So all those in favor of tabling the motion, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion to table has passed, which means we will now go on to the next item. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting this. Mark your ballot. Wait a minute, it's being typed right now. CD number 37, revised 1, 10, 11, table. Would ALA Councillor Tiffany Connor please go to the microphone and read only the resolve clause of ALA Council Document Number 38, revised 1-10-11, resolution in support of WikiLeaks. I'm sorry, microphone six.
Tiffany Connor, CERT Councillor. Resolve that the American Library Association supports the rights of WikiLeaks to publish leaked government documents, commends the efforts of WikiLeaks to expunge from documents names and other material deemed potentially harmful to innocent people, commends WikiLeaks for performing a public service by making available important documents related to foreign and military policy, urges libraries to link their websites to the WikiLeaks websites, and condemns the harassment of WikiLeaks volunteers.
Would the mover like to speak to the motion?
Yes, I would. This resolution expresses ALA's support for freedom of information and access. ALA itself has signed an open letter to the U.S. government officials regarding free expression in the wake of the WikiLeaks controversy, and it can be found on the ALA Emerging Issues webpage. CERT feels that ALA should support WikiLeaks and condemn the continued harassment of WikiLeaks volunteers, examples of which include solitary confinement, suspension of credit cards, pressuring companies hosting WikiLeaks servers, confiscated Twitter feeds, pressure on named WikiLeaks supporters, as well as personal harassment of volunteers to give up names of those who have communicated with WikiLeaks. Additionally, WikiLeaks is utilizing legal and journalistic teams to determine what should be redacted and has thus far only released fully researched items. Thank you.
Microphone six.
Larry Romans, counselor at large. Given the fact that we have dealt with this more generally by approving the resolution from COL, and given all of the discussion, I move that we table this resolution.
It's been moved and seconded from someone over here.
Kevin,
I heard
Reynolds.
A voice. This will take a two-thirds vote again. This is a motion to table. There's no discussion on. Are you the seconder?
I'm the seconder, Alexia Hudson, Pennsylvania Chapter Counselor.
Thank you. So there's no debate, and it takes a two-thirds vote. Would all those in favor of tabling ALA Council Document number 38, revised 110-11, resolution in support of WikiLeaks, please raise one of your hands. Thank you. All those opposed, please raise one of your hands. The motion carries. The motion is now tabled. Mark your ballot. CD number 38, revised 110-11, table. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Molly. I am checking the agenda. I can't believe that we are at the end of it. But it appears we are. We have time now for announcements, and I'm not trying to startle her, but I wanted to ask, is Paula Bremheger here? I know we have people who are getting up to the microphone to make announcements. I just wanted to ask if you would join them, and I would like to call on you to talk about why I need my library, just announce the contest, and also bring attention to Learning for Life, which is the AASL contest too. So I'm going to ask you to please pass your signed vote tally card to the end of the table, and we are going to go forward with announcements. If it's okay, I would like to start with Keith. Is that all right with you, Keith?
I have three announcements. First of all, we have received the following petitions for Counselor at Large. Irene Briggs, Associate Director for Public Services at the Prince George's County Memorial Library in Hyattsville, Maryland. Deirdre Conkling, Director of the Lincoln County Library District in Newport, Oregon. Allison Ernst, the principal at the Allison principal of Allison Ernst Associates Library Consulting in Pleasant Ridge, Michigan. Martin Garner, Reference Services Librarian at Regis University, Reference Services at the Dayton Memorial Library in Denver, Colorado. Gail Guidry Griffin, Library Media Specialist at the Caddo Parish Schools, H.C. Steer Elementary in Shreveport, Louisiana. Wei-Jing Chiu, Technology Division Head at the Worcester Public Library in Worcester, Massachusetts, and Julie Schneider, Library Director at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Ebeling Library for the Health Sciences in Madison, Wisconsin. Second of all, conference attendance stands as of the end of the day Monday at 5,180 advanced registrants, 2,369 on-site registrants, for a total of 7,549, when added to 2,561 exhibitors, brings us over the 10,000 mark at 10,110. That's real good. And that's actually pretty close to Denver 2 years ago, which was at 10,220, and just slightly lower than Boston last year at 11,095. Last of all, we do ask you to remember to place your empty portfolio portfolios in the storage boxes at the document pickup station. And our ALA's incredibly contented staff will retain them for you carefully for your use at the 2011 annual conference.
Thank you, Keith. Microphone number two.
Terry Kirk, Kentucky Chapter Counselor, and I just would like to make a comment about the new conference scheduler. We did a lot of moaning and groaning on the old one, and I didn't see anybody saying anything good about the new one, and I thought it was excellent. I wanted to commend Jenny Levine and her staff.
Microphone number two.
Rocco Steno, New York Counselor, Chapter Counselor. New York Library Association would like to encourage the council to vote in the Pepsi Challenge. We're competing for a $50,000 grant, so please, every day, text 105226 to text that number to the following number, 73774. And I know that the New Jersey Library Association is competing for a $250,000 grant with their state library, but I don't have that number, so. But every day, text it. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number three.
Good afternoon, good morning. Paula Brumheger, Council at Large. Thank you, Madam President, for a moment to speak about the Why I Need My Library contest. I hope all of the councilors in the room have picked up the flyers put together by ALA staff, which highlight not only the Why I Need My Library contest, but another of Roberta's initiatives, our authors, our advocates. Please read this, raise awareness. Thank you for the support from the youth divisions, as well as PLA, who have been working to co-sponsor this. And also, Roberta mentioned a couple of the other divisions are similarly working in tandem with us. AASL has their own video contest that is running now through the middle of March. The Why I Need My Library contest, which is open to people 13 to 18, is running now, launched at midwinter, and will run through the middle of April, right around Teen Tech Week, to coincide with YALSA's initiative. So please become familiar with it. It is intended to continue to the excellent work of past President Jim Reddick and Camille O'Leary to take that frontline advocacy and not only produce a product, which is a quality and unique product that we can use as an association to highlight the continued relevance of libraries to our younger users, but also a model for other libraries who would like to engage in a similar contest or a similar way to use technology to reach all of their community members. Thank you. There's information at why there's an email. Diane Chen, who I've been working with, is the co-leader of the group that put this together. She and I can answer questions on the email, on the flyer, and you can go to I Love Libraries for all of the information as well as the forms, the entry forms, and the details. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone number three.
Tom Wilding, Counselor at Large. And I just want to point out that if we can drag this out for another hour and 13 minutes, we could actually adjourn at 111, 11, 11, 11, 11.
Thank you, Tom. Microphone number three.
Barbara Jenko, Counselor at Large. Many of you have already received an email from Michael Dowling from the ALA International Relations Office, in which he reminds ALA members that tomorrow is the anniversary of the Haiti earthquake. ALA has already contributed $25,000 to the rebuild libraries in Haiti. If all of us only gave a dollar, that would be $60,000. So I would encourage everybody to go to ala.org/Haiti. And make a contribution to help ALA rebuild libraries in Haiti.
Thank you. Microphone number four.
Carolyn Giamber, Counselor at Large. I am also turning in petitions to run for Counselor at Large for school librarian Kathy Marriott and school librarian Rosina Alimo. And thanks to you who signed for those. Thank you.
Do we have any other announcements? I want to ask that the executive board members please come up to the dais so that we can determine when the board meeting will begin. And I adjourn Council 3. Thank you.